You are now listening to Conversations with Congressman King. Discussion on issues that impact your life with your representative from Iowa's 5th District.
Welcome to Conversations with Congressman King, and we're back at the microphone with U.S. Trade Representative Susan Schwab, who was appointed as the Trade Representative on June 8, 2006, and leads this nation's effort in all of our efforts globally to negotiate our trade agreements, and has such a long history of being involved in trade and gone off into the private sector, into the academic world, into the government world is where you actually got your start, Ambassador, as a trade negotiator and negotiating ag trade with Japan. So you started back in those years and went through this whole process, and you've got the broadest experience to bring to the table when you sit down at the table with all the nations in the world that are interested in doing business. Welcome aboard, Ambassador Schwab.
Thank you very much, Congressman King.
We've had some conversations about these Doha rounds and the WTO trade negotiations, and I'd like to just pick up here at this point. And we were talking about the Cancun negotiations that melted down that Sunday afternoon about 3:30 when the gavel came down. It was clear nothing was going to get accomplished. And we also reflected upon how we met at a dinner at the residence of the Indian ambassador. And the tone of that dinner was very positive, very friendly. We had about a 90-minute exchange, if I remember right, and there's so much information flowed back and forth across that table. It made it all very worthwhile for me. But the tone there was very positive, and we built some relationships that you've since capitalized on. Could you contrast that with the tone that some of the countries had in Cancun and perhaps India specifically?
Well, I think that is a very, very good contrast. Cancun, you had a number of developing countries pull all the other developing countries together and say, okay, you're somehow going to be selling out if you're trying to negotiate a deal with the developed countries. And they turned on the U.S. and the European Union and blew up the Doha Round trade talks. And the Doha Round, as you know, was launched in 2001, so it's been going on for 6 years, on again, off again, and Cancun was a big blow-up. We had another blow-up, or it certainly didn't compare to Cancun, but it was an impasse, a breakdown, let's call it that, more diplomatically, last July. That was less of a breakdown from a north-south perspective, meaning developed versus developing countries, and more breakdown over agricultural trade. And in the case of Cancun, it was very clearly north versus south, or developed versus developing countries. Last year in Geneva, when the breakdown took place, it was in part because the United States said, look, why negotiate a once-in-a-generation multilateral trade agreement if you aren't going to get market access, if you're not going to generate new trade flows? And some of the developing countries, including some of the advanced developing countries, India being really the lead of the pack, but India and China, Indonesia and some others were saying, no, we think the developed countries ought to open their markets and we ought to do nothing. And that didn't cut it.
I had a speaker before the Conservative Opportunity Society, at which I host a breakfast every Wednesday morning, who made the statement that in negotiations you never get something for nothing, that you always have to have some kind of leverage. You have to have something that you want. You have to have something that they want. And so if there's ever anything that comes for nothing, it's because someone made a mistake. Would that be consistent in what you've learned in your many years in dealing with trade negotiations? I don't want to imply that you're a very, very seasoned, because I actually find you to be a youthful ambassador.
Oh, you're very kind. Thank you. You are absolutely right that when you're negotiating a trade deal, you've got moral suasion, and that'll get, that and a couple bucks will buy you a cup of coffee at a fancy coffee place. No, you really need to be able to trade something. And in the case of the Doha Round negotiations last July, we said, look, the way that we're going to count whether the Doha Round is successful is if there are new trade flows. New trade flows meaning there's enough new market access so that we and other countries are exporting more and importing more. And we feel very confident that our agricultural producers, our manufacturers, our service providers are globally competitive, and what we need is to be able to help level the playing field. So that was the position we took. Other countries have taken the position that the U.S. and in particular the EU need to be doing less in terms of trade-distorting domestic support, trade-distorting subsidies, including, you know, in particular in agriculture. And the point we've made is we are comfortable disciplining, putting some limits on our trade-distorting subsidies. I mean, have you ever met a farmer who really wants a subsidy? No, they want a fair shake, and maybe a little bit of a safety net, but they want to be able to sell. And what gets prices up? Exports get prices up. Consumption gets prices up. And so a successful Doha Round agreement that trades new market access, new export opportunities for some disciplines on trade-distorting support is a deal that potentially could come together if and only if there's enough new market access out there to justify it.
Well, I'm confident that America's agriculture producers can and also believe they can compete with anyone in the world if given a level playing field. I would also not want to miss this opportunity to ask you about your trip down to Central America when the president was down there some few weeks ago, and we had a conversation from down there. I appreciate your call back from there and then the extended conversation once you got back. That's very helpful to me, and I slept a little better knowing you were down there protecting our ethanol interests. But I wanted to point something out. I think I passed this along to you that about a year ago when I was down in South America and Senator Grassley, myself, and a number of other members, we did discussions, negotiations in Brazil and in Argentina and then stopped back through Panama on the way back. Not much for discussions there in Panama. But in Brazil, their trade minister, I'd gone to the Minister of Agriculture's office, and I think his name is Rodriguez, and there on the wall, he had a panoramic picture of 39 combines going through a field of soybeans, and behind that were a number of tractors with planters planting right in behind that, right in behind those combines. A panoramic picture, nice long picture. And so we had a discussion about how far agriculture had come in Brazil. They're quite proud of the way they've become more mechanized in the production that they have. And they will tell us we can produce, they say they can produce eight times as many soybeans if they take out a number of trees, but at least double their soybean production if they don't take out any trees. Well, that's one thing. So I went from that meeting to the big square diplomatic sit-down table with their trade minister, who said, we have, to us, now two of us from Iowa, Senator Grassley and myself, and he said, the trade minister said to us, we have won the war on agricultural trade. It will be quite impossible to compete with us. And so my response to that was that I had seen the picture of the 39 combines, and it was difficult for them to declare themselves to be a developing nation and ask for special considerations in negotiations with that kind of picture on the wall, especially when he just got through telling us they'd won the war on trade and be quite impossible to compete with them. How do you reason that, or how does that reflect off of your experience with the Brazilians?
Well, that picture did not look like a small family farm to me. didn't sound like a small family farm to me. Didn't look like one to you, I suspect. No, I remember that trip because I think you and Senator Grassley really did a great job in Argentina and Brazil of making the case of how important it is to the United States that developing countries that are powerhouse exporters in agriculture need to be taking on additional responsibility. And I think that was the message that you all delivered. It was a message that the president delivered when we were down there just several weeks ago. The Brazilians are playing a very, very interesting role in the Doha Round negotiation because we are partners with them, very close partners with them, in terms of trying to get more market access. Now, they're focused more on developed countries than developing countries because while they want developing country markets to open more, going back to the Cancun days, they're a little nervous about losing their solidarity with the other developing countries. But they are helping us, for example, with the EU, the European Union, that has in many ways been very protectionist in agriculture, not just in terms of tariff barriers, as your pork producers and your beef producers know, but also in what we call SPS, sanitary, phytosanitary issues. So Brazil, on the one hand, is a real partner of ours in trying to get expanded market access. And on the other hand, they're saying, we don't want to see the U.S. And the EU and Japan subsidizing your exports of agricultural commodities or imposing too many trade-distorting domestic subsidies. If the Doha Round ever concludes, which I hope it will, because I think it would be a successful Doha Round outcome is very much in the United States' interest. One of the things we've already agreed is that agricultural export subsidies will be eliminated by the year 2013.
And I think that we can live with that if we can set that target up. You're listening to Conversations with Congressman King, and we're here with U.S. Trade Ambassador Susan Schwab, and speaking about Brazil. And one of the things that I've noticed is that the other side of this will always make – they'll always take the other side of the argument and drive it at you. And when you open your mouth, take a deep breath to defend yourself, they will say, yeah, I know what you're going to say. So they say it in shorthand, and they say it a little biased, and then they want to keep pushing their agenda again. I've really seen that in Europe around the round table at the European Union. But I wanted to bring up that you spent that time in South America while the president was down there, and the Brazilian ethanol initiative. A lot of folks believe that Brazil is leading the world in ethanol production, and that somehow we should go down and look at their technology and learn how to do it here. I'm quite confident that the United States is leading the world in ethanol production, and that Iowa is leading the United States, and that the 5th District of Iowa will lead America of all 435 districts before the snow flies this year, Ambassador. You went down there, and you were protecting the 54-cent tariff on Brazilian ethanol. And I wanted to say thank you for that. That couldn't have been an easy job.
Well, you can bet when the president of the foreign country and their lead trade negotiator, trade minister, is hammering on an issue, you hear it. But the response was, look, it's there. It's Congress's responsibility. Congressman put that tariff there. And we're not taking it off. Now, it will obviously, as you know, it sunsets at some point. 2009, as I recall, was just extended. And that's a different issue. But for now, I think there is a recognition that we've got a good thing going in terms of ethanol. And as you know, the president feels very, very strongly about moving toward energy independence and support for alternative fuels.
You know, and I find him to be extraordinarily knowledgeable about ethanol. I took a ride with him in his car from the airport in Des Moines on around to the state fairgrounds. And we went the long way around, so it was maybe a little longer than a half hour. He talked ethanol almost the whole way. It might have been because I had other things I wanted to talk about that he didn't want to bring up, but he's the president, so he can do what he wants that way. But I wanted to say this, that 54-cent tariff that's on Brazilian ethanol coming into the United States provides for this. If we took that 54 cents a gallon off, then Brazil would attract U.S. capital to build their infrastructure to increase their ethanol production down there at the expense of U.S. capital that's going into the development of our infrastructure for renewable fuels here. And one of those, easy way to make that point is, I represent the western third of Iowa, and so Minnesota and Missouri is where the line is drawn. And in that district, those 32 counties, we had over $1 billion in private capital invested in renewable energy infrastructure last year. This year looks like it will meet or exceed that for the 2007 construction season. A lot of that capital might have been put into infrastructure in Brazil if we didn't have the 54 cents that you so ably defended.
Well, thank you.
That's my self-interest on that, but I think it's an important one. And these issues that float around the world here, I also wanted to point out that in setting this target date of 2013 to be able to ratchet down our trade distorting subsidies while developing countries are opening up their markets, the decline in that slope, if we draw that on a graph from the U.S.'s trade distorting subsidies down to 2013, the European Union gets on that graph. I believe they're about 4.5 times greater in their domestic subsidies than we are?
Well, there are two sets of issues, and you're absolutely right, two sets of issues. One is export subsidies, where we have very few agricultural export subsidies, and the EU has massive agricultural export subsidies. And so the fact that we have, if the Doha round is concluded, a commitment on the part of the EU to eliminate their export subsidies by 2013 is very significant. Our farmers have been competing with subsidized EU exports for a very long time. It's particularly a problem in dairy, but some other crops as well. In the case of trade-distorting domestic support, there we're talking about our domestic farm programs. And the point there, as you've noted, is that the EU has significantly more domestic agricultural subsidies than does the United States, and that includes the most trade-distorting subsidies. Any agreement that we reach in the Doha round on trade-distorting subsidies, these are domestic farm programs, would have to do a number of things. One would have to be offset by increased market access. We've talked about that, but it is very, very important.
It's been very difficult to push those negotiations through with the Europeans. Seem to be a little intransigent, but they've had a successful election in France, and so I'm ready to sell American cheese, American wine to the French, and I want to thank you, U.S. Trade Ambassador Susan Schwab, for being with us here on Conversations with Congressman King.
Please join us next time on Conversations with Congressman King. For more information on any of the topics mentioned today, visit the website at house.gov/Steve King.